live from San Good Francisco. Morning. I'm Brian Mitten. Hey, Gabe, how are you?
Not bad. In Omaha, I'm Gabe Knuth, and we've got guests today.
Yeah, so joining me here in the studio in San Francisco, we've got two people. We've got both from Oracle. We've got John Renko. So, John, thank you so much for joining today.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
And Chris Kowalik, also from Oracle. Thank you for joining.
Thanks, Brian.
You may know John actually from the Oracle Geek that we did back in January. He was the Oracle television personality that we had.
And then also joining us by telephone, we've got Jim Musgrave from Oracle. He's joining us from England.
Hi, folks.
This is one of our special edition shows, and so this is a sponsored show by Oracle, but we are still free to talk about whatever we want. And the idea for what we're going to do today is dig into Oracle's desktop virtualization technologies. So we know Sunray, Secure Global Desktop, you know, the VDI stuff. They've got iPad apps, all sorts of things. And we kind of figure we'll sort of break this show into sort of a couple halves. The first half we'll talk about Secure Global Desktop and where that is, and then the second half we'll talk about Sunrays and the VDI and things like that. So it's interesting, you know, I've said this before. And let me just pull up this link here. My very first blog post, speaking of Secure Global Desktop, the very first blog post I ever wrote in my life, which next May will be 10 years ago, I just posted that link in the chat room, is called Tarantella Buys New Moon. And when we talk about Oracle Secure Global Desktop, like, that's the lineage, right? Like, that's the...
Yeah, that's right. I mean, not so much New Moon itself, but from Tarantella, yeah. And those two products, the New Moon product and the Tarantella Enterprise Edition product at the time, coexisted at Tarantella.
Yeah. And then what, Sun bought Tarantella, Oracle bought Sun, and this product, though, it's been there all along, delivering Windows and, I think, what, X Windows, Microsoft Windows desktops. And
that's right. Windows, Unix, mainframe, mid-range, lots of different... converters in the middle section there to connect to whatever types of apps people want to have on the back end. Jim, when did SGD originally debut? It was late 90s somewhere, right?
Yeah, about the first version was about 1997.
Oh, wow. So that's when we talk about this industry getting started. Like, those are the early days of like WinFram and that kind of stuff. So this is right in the heart of it.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it predates the New Moon stuff by a good few years.
Right, and I guess that's an important delineation to make, is that Secure Global Desktop is an Oracle or a Sun feature or a product, whereas the New Moon stuff, that's the Windows remote desktop solution that eventually became, once we went through Tarantella and then Sun, became folded into Secure Global Desktop, and then later was spun out to ProPalms. That was the stuff that Brian and I paid attention to, the New Moon stuff. Way back in the day. So this Secure Global Desktop is the lineage traces all the way back to early Sun, not necessarily, or beyond New Moon, I guess I should say.
Right. The lineage goes further than Sun, and the New Moon stuff was kind of never really featured in the Secure Global Desktop product, or Tarantella that predates the Sun Secure Global Desktop, which subsequently became Oracle Secure Global Desktop. That's right.
So it sounds like I'm confused then about this thing. So looking at Oracle today, 2012, Secure Global Desktop, can you give us the overview of what that product is and how it fits into delivering the VDI stack?
Do you want to go, Jim, or do you want me to do it?
I'm happy for you to kick off, Chris, and I can chip in wherever you need me.
Okay. So an important thing to delineate, actually, is that the VDI and the SGD stuff are actually separate.
Okay.
It's sort of that idea between sort of, you know, Zen app and the Zen desktop thing. It's like one's focused on application delivery, one's focused on full desktop delivery.
Now,
both products can actually do a lot of both, right? So for, cases where customers have a mixture of things, you know, they don't necessarily have to use both things. We built a lot of features in both products to be able to cope with those sort of different scenarios. But yeah, so SGD, Secure Global Desktop, is based around the idea of delivering, a UI virtualization, sort of application virtualization, or, you know, presentation virtualization, to use the older term, of the applications itself. And starting at Sun, the product was really focused around delivering applications, sort of within a vertical stack whenever possible. Now, of course, it's general purpose and it could be used for any applications. But being we've been part of these large companies since Tarantella was acquired, You know, we really focused on those companies' applications. So at Sun, you know, we worked on trying to ensure that you know, the Sun applications worked well through it as well as possible. Same thing with the Oracle apps. We want to make sure that people get the optimum experience using an Oracle application through Secure Global Desktop. And that's where our focus is, although we do test all kinds of things.
We'd say Oracle applications. These are all like the billion applications, like Oracle Financials and all this,
exactly.
All that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
So what is – okay, so a lot of these Oracle apps today, I mean, are these desktop apps, these web apps with plugins? And then what does Secure Global Desktop do that those apps don't do on their own?
Yeah, so a lot of them are web apps. And one of the things that we find with web applications is that vendors all have their own preferences for how to do a web application. So it's kind of back to the original idea of Tarantella, which was to webify, you know, applications. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't want to rewrite them, but now they have. And when they did, you know, they used a lot of different technologies. There's different Java runtimes. There's, you know, all kinds of plugins. And what we find is that especially when customers mix and match applications from multiple vendors, so you'll have some applications from Oracle and some applications from other companies, you're not necessarily going to have an overlap on you know, the different browser versions and the different Java versions and everything that you need. And you can't necessarily do that on one desktop. So you'll be in a situation where, like, your laptop can run some of the apps but not all of them because you don't have the right Java version or the right browser version. So SGD eliminates all that because you create a dedicated application execution environment for the applications on the server side.
And that's like an app-per-app basis, sort of.
Sure.
So you have the so if you talk about architecture, so the apps you're delivering, the web apps, whatever, they've got web service and stuff on the back end. So then Secure Global Desktop is its own server that has sort of like the client environment build up that can run the apps. And then it's just using presentation remoting to remote that down to the user.
That's pretty much right. Yeah, usually, typically, it's a Windows server is going to be where the client side of the application runs. And then we remote that part of it down to the client device.
And then what are you remoting that with? Is that with ALP? I remember that from
It's AIP on the SGD side, and I'll let Jim go into that a little bit. I've been talking too much, Jim.
Sure, and I guess that's one of the key benefits of deploying Oracle applications and other classes of applications through SGD is that SGD sits in the middle. So the application servers are talking standard protocols, whether that's terminal services or X11 to an X application. So typically, you know, that infrastructure in a data center co-located with the SGD server. So those protocols that aren't necessarily that efficient for transmitting over a wider area network or over the internet, bringing an SGD which optimizes that connection. So the hop between the SGD server co-located ideally with the application layer in the data center, AIP over the long haul to the SGD client component means that typically we see significant performance gains when deploying Oracle applications or Windows applications or whatever application you choose to deploy through SGD. We see significant performance gains.
So the Sunray terminals use ALP, I believe it is the protocol. So why are those different? I mean, because in a way we're doing similar things, but I assume is one more optimized for browsers, or is there some other consideration there?
There are some key differences. I guess the simple answer as to why we've got two protocols is the history of these two products. So when AIP was patented those many years ago, that was done as part of Tarantella. So there's been a significant investment in AIP. It's in essence functionally the same kind of deal as ALP. In SGD we have an X server which draws to a local frame buffer. We have the AIP protocol, which is a TCP based protocol, and we use various techniques to optimize the bandwidth that's available and try and reduce the impact of any latency as much as we can using compression and other image handling techniques.
And then from the client side, you're accessing this is with the regular browser, right? I mean,
right.
So it's...
Is there an agent or a client on the client side that plugs into the browser?
Yeah, so the user experience is I fire up a browser, I point my browser at an SGD server or the secure gateway that maybe we'll come onto later. The bootstrap process is a very thin Java applet that's downloaded, and the Java applet triggers the download of the SGD client, which today is a native component, and it's just downloaded in a Java archive.
Okay, so does that mean anything with Java will work, or is there still something that has to be installed on the machine? Can I walk up to this from, or can I use, say, my Android tablet or something like that, that maybe there isn't a native, you know, Windows application or Linux or that kind of a thing?
Sure. Today, we support most desktop platforms. If it's a Java-enabled browser, great. If for whatever reason you don't choose to run Java within the browser, then there are other means to install that client component, whether it's a Windows MSI or on a Mac, you know, a DMG image, whatever. There are ways to work around lack of Java.
Okay, so there is a client-side component that actually has to be installed apart from the Java, which the Java is just used to kick off that client installation.
The Java was just a convenient. The Java component is just a convenient way of deploying that component. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, and then a lot of people who use this, I know we've talked about this a lot. I mean, Oracle sort of was, like reborn, like from my standpoint, because, you know, I feel like the, you know, Sun was doing their stuff on Secure Global Desktop, and then Sun bought Oracle, and then there's a lot of product stuff happening, and then, you know, I think we did an article like a year ago, and it's like, hey, look, Oracle still got all this stuff, and almost the silent. I mean, I think because Oracle's so pervasive, you almost don't realize the size of the customer base who are actually using this stuff. And so I imagine that a lot of the people who are using Secure Global Desktop are, as you say, those who are Oracle, you know, enterprise applications customers, and who are using that as a way, because there's so many, you know, browser requirements and plugins and all this kind of stuff. In this way, it's just sort of like
one requirement.
Yeah, one requirement for everyone. But the people who use this, will they use this for other Windows apps that are not sort of Oracle applications? Or do you find they're using this like as a delivery mechanism for their Oracle apps, and then they're doing something else to deliver, you know, like more traditional Windows apps to the rest of their users?
Yeah, no, we find that people are, being it supports so many different protocols in the back end, as Jim was talking about. You know, like on the central server, you know, there's these protocol engines that talk native protocols to whatever it is you're accessing. So, you know, if it's a Windows app, it's going to be RDP. You know, if it's a, you know, Unix app, it'll be, you know, X11, et cetera. Same thing with me for a mid-range. So it ends up being kind of a general purpose tool for delivering really any application that you would want. So, yeah, we have people delivering, you know, sort of your standard browser-based application to sort of, you know, eliminate or reduce the compatibility requirements. But you also have people who have, you know, green screen apps that they haven't updated yet. You know, even some of the cell phone companies are still using green screen apps for things like that. All of the ticketing agents at you know, airlines and things like that are using those apps still. So you have the convenience of being able to take literally any application that your company has and deliver it through like kind of a, you know, a single portal. Like it's just a web browser interface. You log in, you get links for whatever apps you have access to. It doesn't matter where they came from. It doesn't matter which data center they're in. They could be anywhere around the world. And you get to, you know, combine all those onto your screen like they were installed locally.
Ironically, Oracle buying Sun is probably great for this, because if the whole message is like, you know, Secure Global Desktop can be used to sort of simplify complexity into a single stream, well, welcome complexity. Like, it's the best thing. Like, some strategist is sitting around like, what's the most confusing, you know, like – billion product company who has a million different requirements. Yeah. Bam, done.
So we've talked about this in the context of any application. I liken this to any application input to Secure Global Desktop and then one output. Are there applications that don't work with this? I mean, so it's easy to say anything, but is there a type of application or a specific genre that doesn't work with Secure Global Desktop?
Jim, you want to do that?
The protocols that we support that the SGD server can reach out to and launch on, there's a diverse set of protocols, but there are some proprietary protocols out there. But generally, you know, if you have an enterprise application that you want to provide and manage access to, typically SGD can do it.
So if it's X11 or if it's a browser based thing or if it's RDP, I guess for that matter, or HDX, that to put them into words that we're more familiar with as desktop work guys. Sure. If it's anything like that, then we're fine. It's just when we get to some fringe, more proprietary things that's where we run into issues. But even then, though, if there was some goofy thing, maybe that could be set up with a Windows client, and then you could remote that Windows desktop via SGD. So, you know, I guess you'd be hard to find something that didn't work. Period.
Right. I mean, there are some classes of application that don't necessarily lend themselves to being remoted with any kind of technology, not just SGD. You know, there are some heavy multimedia applications and 3D applications, as you guys well know, that really those things need to be run locally to be usable.
Sure. Okay.
Coming back to the client, so Dan Brinkman in the chat has asked from the client standpoint. So talk about the Mac client, the Windows client, other platforms. Like specifically, if I browse to this with Android client, iOS, something like that, is that going to work? Is that on the roadmap for clients for secure global desktop?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd be foolish to ignore the mobile requirement, and that's something I can't really give too much detail about it. But tablet support is a top priority for us, and we're obviously trying to address that requirement as soon as we can.
There's a secure gateway feature of this too, right? Or the web access platform that. When I took a briefing on this, I came away from that thinking that that I feel like that might be a good way to get access to those tablets, because then there's access to all those internal corporate applications that users could or companies could use to take advantage of all of that.
Right. So for enterprise scale deployment of SGD, typically you'd have multiple SGD servers in a configuration that we call an array. When Sun wanted to deploy SGD at a corporate level, one of the big holes we had was no real secure remote access without the use of VPNs and other horrible stuff in the middle. So we decided that as part of the SGD offering, we should offer a secure gateway, which basically sits in front of an SGD array. With the ability to secure all communication through very few ports opening required open within the data center, so sits out there. All my business logic and data sits securely within the data center. It's a single point of access, and as you say, is an ideal interface into my data center, my enterprise applications, from devices such as tablets.
So, and that to me is agreeable, because I wouldn't want to have the users have to know that they need to secure their connection or connect to a VPN or something like that. So I love the idea of these applications that or these clients that provide access to applications via a secure channel behind the scenes that the users don't have to know about. So I'm a fan of that.
Right. It's real. You know, one of our main goals with SGD is to make the user experience as simple and as accessible as possible. And the gateway, as you say, is one of the ways that we achieve that.
Well, and you guys mentioned complexity too, Brian and Gabe both. And one of the things that's interesting about that is the secure gateway, you know, it's optional to use it, but it's included. It's not a separate SKU. It's not something you'd have to decide to buy. Everything's included in the product. It's just one.
The secure gateway is included with Secure Global Desktop.
Yep.
Yeah. And I imagine also, I mean, you know, these big enterprise software deals, like if you're buying some massive, like, Oracle application and you need to get this out there and secure global desktop as part of that, I'm sure that those enterprise sales reps are just going to kind of roll that into, like, no one's going to lose Oracle Financial sale because of no secure global desktop. But yeah. But that's the thing. Like, if you look at that, comparing that to other sort of ways of delivering out these applications that are separate products, separate licensing, all that kind of thing, if they can just roll that in,
that's right.
Then, I mean, I imagine that's you're getting a lot of sales where you're sort of just being bundled in with what the offerings are.
Right. And actually, all the products, SGDN, the VDI products, they're all licensed under the exact same model that all the other Oracle products are too. So our customers are very familiar with that. There's nothing unique about our products versus the rest of the Oracle applications. So it makes it a lot simpler for folks.
There's a couple questions about like Citrix clients, which is not – that's a question for Citrix. But it brings up a point, though, is that – I mean, imagine a lot of – you know, you can broker anything back through. So I know that was something we did back – I mean, even a decade ago, whereas if you have – like a Zen desktop infrastructure, and you want to broker that out to your users, you can broker that through Secure Global Desktop, just like anything else, right? You run that Citrix client on there and remote down everything.
Sure.
Although maybe you wouldn't even need that. I guess you could do that directly.
Yeah, I mean, and there's multiple ways to do it too, right? I mean, I saw the question come in about the Solaris client. I mean, you could obviously remote a Windows desktop that's running the Citrix client too, you know, if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things about Secure Global Desktop about these Oracle apps in general, especially a lot of these sort of big line and business applications. And so there's a lot of, I know Oracle's done a lot with single sign-on and like smart card authentication, and we'll get into that later on when we talk about Sunrays. But all of that, I imagine, like, can that pass through with Secure Global Desktop? So if I sort of authenticate to that, then it can sort of handle all the authentication, even if it's two-factor authentication, to all these back-end enterprise apps that I want to use.
I'll let Jim answer.
Right, we support a number of different authentication mechanisms at the SGD level, whether that's two-factor, web-based, Unix-based, Active Directory, LDAP, and you know there are a number of solutions available if your main goal is to achieve single sign-on. The other capability that SGD has is for situations where that's not achievable with external components, is we have the ability to manage passwords within SGD. So basically users are asked for a password one time, and then that password is cached and used for any further access to that application on that server.
Oh, so I didn't know that. So that's actually back on the Secure Global Desktop server. Like, so it's making all the connections, all these back-end, you know, web applications and all that kind of stuff. So if I authenticate into that, it'll hold those back on that server. And then once I authenticate to Secure Global Desktop and just click the link through to my, you know, expense application, it just shoves that right through.
Sure.
I kind of want this actually at TechTarget right now, because we're, like all companies,
there's so much stuff.
Yeah, and we have...
There's so much stuff on the back end and crappy VPNs to get into it.
Yeah, crappy VPNs, and also... I mean, you know, like almost every application now is web-based, and that's fine. But, you know, we just converted over to new expense systems. So, like, the way we do, you know, like, we've got a system for requesting POs that's different from our system for expenses, which is different from booking the flights. And, like, some of these we host ourselves and use domain accounts. Some of these are external with domain accounts. Some of these are their own accounts. And, of course, all the passwords are all different. And we have an intranet. And you have to log into our VPN for half of them, but not for others, which is weird that, like, you need the VPN to, I don't know, like, I think it's arbitrary. Like, I think that they just decide if we host it ourselves, it's on the VPN without thinking, like, this is stupid to make us jump through the hoops, but then, like, our expense system is no VPN because it's right. A third-party app, you know. And our links to apps, it's just links to the front doors, but the links don't do anything. It just takes you there, but... if we had this kind of brokering between,
yeah, and there's no federation.
Yeah.
You know, it all uses the same credentials if it's on the VPN. We're all using domain credentials, but there's no single sign-on or anything like that either. So, yeah,
you need Oracle's e-business suite to.
Okay, yeah. So the head of our IT is called Joel Johnson. That's Joel Johnson. He's in Boston, Massachusetts. So whomever's out there from Oracle who has the Massachusetts territory, give him a call. Don't mention my name though.
He won't hear this, huh?
Actually, he might.
Whenever his phone starts ringing, he's like, God dang, what did these guys do?
You know, you brought up performance earlier, too, and Oracle applications. And one of the things that's really interesting, thinking about single sign-on and having, you know, a bunch of Oracle applications or applications from other vendors, too, Oracle has a product called Exalogic, which is a really, really high-performance system for hosting Oracle applications. And SGD has been certified and now designed to be used as a front end for Exalogic. So when you're talking about, you know, Oracle apps reps, you know, talking about, you know, secure remote access to things, you know, we have an integration piece with, you know, the most high performance platform that you can get for running Oracle applications, and then you stick SGD in front of that, and again, those client side running on those client apps running on the server side, people get like really, really high performance, and it's sort of a gateway into the whole Exalogic infrastructure too.
Exalogic is it's a cloud based thing. This is I just put this link in the chat room.
Yes.
And so okay, and this is, I guess, the classic. This is sort of the classic server hosted computing, is that, because we always used to think, you know, web apps is just HTML and that's small and simple, so you might as well run the client, you know, be in the browser, like on your local device, and let all the traffic go back and forth. But now we have these apps, there's just so much data and all like inline adding and page refreshing and all this sort of stuff. And so we definitely realized that, like, if I could put my web browser on the cloud and then remote the UI, that's like actually way faster.
That's right.
Especially on these devices that don't have as much horsepower to like build all these complex pages so fast and everything. So
yeah.
Now I didn't really consider that, but I mean that's I can see that definitely.
I had a question noted in our notes that you and I share, but so we already maybe answered this when we're talking about using a solution like this within our own TechTarget walls, but. I guess it kind of – SGD sells itself when you're talking to an Oracle shop. But what beyond what we just talked about of just getting around annoying IT practices, you know, why do non-Oracle shops want to use SGD? What's the benefit there?
Sound like Jim was about to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say I guess the key points really are obviously a diverse set of platforms and application types that SGD easily provides access to. It's easily deployed. It's tried and tested technology for secure remote access, easily deployed to users. And something that we haven't really touched upon is the fact that SGD has a whole management capability that controls which bits of your organization get access to their particular types of application that they need. So there's a whole management capability within SGD. It's really simple to install. You know, I don't need to be a certified practitioner to install or manage this stuff. It just works.
Yeah. Do you have to know? Do you have to be a Solaris guy, or do you have to know what level of knowledge do you have to have about, you know, the Unix side to put something like this together?
Sure. I mean it's not obvious. We haven't really touched upon this, but the SGD server can be installed on Solaris and or Linux. Basic admin skills required once installed, which is, you know, a simple package extract. Everything else is accessible and managed through web-based admin tools. Depending on what you want to do, you may have more flexibility and increased capability if you've got advanced Unix skills, but really minimal skills required on the server side. The other thing is that SGD is available on Oracle Linux, but also for Oracle virtualization, the OVM server virtualization, we've actually put together some templates that mean that SGD is really quick and easy to deploy if that's a platform that you have in your infrastructure.
And that's going to be the Oracle, the OVM stuff. That's Solaris or Oracle Linux. SGD doesn't run a Windows server. It just has agents for Windows server if you're brokering Windows applications or Windows browsers.
Right. The Oracle, the main server component is supported on Oracle Solaris, Spark, and x86, and Oracle Linux.
So I guess, do you have a virtual appliance, or is that in the works? Like, what does it take so I can install it?
Well, the template, like Jim mentioned, is probably the easiest way, right? Yeah. So OVM is a server virtualization platform similar to vSphere, and you can download the template. It's pre-configured. You know, Linux is already installed. Everything's already installed. You just do a couple of tweaks of IP address and that sort
that
of thing.
That means I have to have Oracle VM running, though, first. So if I'm a Windows person.
Yeah.
Although I'm so pissed at Microsoft these days, so maybe I should just, finally learn Linux and be done with it. So Jim, I know it's late for you. Any final thoughts before we let you go and sort of transition the conversation off to talk about Sunrays and that sort of thing?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I guess there's plenty of stuff that we haven't covered in any great detail. We haven't been able to do a demo or anything, so I guess it would be nice to be able to do that in the future so that people can really see how easy it is to deploy and use. And if you guys, if you want to get access to this stuff, it's really easy to get access to on the Oracle download site, along with all the other Oracle software. So help yourself, have a play.
And we'll add to the show notes, which will be when you're watching this down below. We'll add the links to download. And I don't know if you all have any videos of demo or installation, that kind of stuff. But we'll collect those and throw all those into the post as well.
Perfect.
All right. Well, Jim Musgrave, thank you so much for staying in the office, or home office, wherever you are now. Thank you for staying late and joining us. We'll let you go. Enjoy your evening, and we'll speak to you soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much. Bye.
If you're just joining us, today is Tuesday, September 4th. This is a special edition of Brian and Gabe Live. I am Brian Madden from San Francisco. We also have, via Skype, Gabe Knuth from Omaha.
Good day.
And here in the studio in San Francisco from Oracle, Chris Kowalik and John Renko. The second half of the show, we want to focus on what Oracle is doing in the VDI space, and the Sunrays, and all that kind of stuff. And we've actually got a couple of questions in the chat room from the first half regarding the same. But John, you brought a Sunray, actually. I'm going to hand this thing.
Yeah, let's see.
And this is, I believe. All right.
Wait, is it really heavy?
Sunray. It's shiny. It's an Oracle hardware, right? I think this is the first product that had Oracle logo. The first hardware product from Oracle, right?
Yeah, it was in the works during the transition, so it came out right away.
And I mean, Sunrays. First of all, I'm glad that Oracle still has the name Sunray because I mean it's ubiquitous that this is thin client Sun. I mean, these things have been around.
Sunray debuted in September 9th, 1999.
Oh wow!
So they've been around for a while, and that's the Sunray 3 Plus client that you have there. So that's kind of the flagship zero client, if you will. People have been saying thin clients for years, and then the market kind of changed with what is a thin client. And so this is a stateless device. You're not storing data. There's no moving parts or anything. So it, powered off, and there is no data.
And so there's no firmware or there's no OS on here, right?
There is a firmware that gets flashed on there, and that is just the client-side piece that complements whatever multimedia tricks you might be doing on the server side, right? There's a GPU in there. You're driving your monitors off of that. So, and in this case, the 3 Plus supports you got two DVI outputs on there.
Yeah.
So you can do all the cool multi-monitor and extended desktop type of tricks.
How big is the firmware these days, John? It's pretty small, right?
Yeah, it's pretty small. Maybe 3 megabytes, 2 megabytes.
Yeah, so this isn't a giant, yeah.
Yeah.
And these things, and this the 3 Plus, that means it's got the smart card thing in the top, right?
All of them have the smart card readers. So there's in the 3 series of the clients, there's the 3i, which is an integrated Sunray device and a monitor. Mm-hmm. So you just have a single device. And then there's the Sunray 3. And then the 3 Plus. So the 3 just has a single DVI output, and the 3 Plus has the dual.
These are the devices. And the people who – okay, you guys win the – what do I want to say? Like religious fervor battle of thin clients.
Every time we talk about thin clients or zero clients.
because the people who love Sunrays freaking love these things.
It's a cult.
Yeah. more so than VMware, people love VMware. Sunray people love Sunrays.
Yeah, that's true.
It actually sounds funny. The cult of the Sunray.
why?
they just work. You know, there's cases. So these devices came out in 99. You had the Sunray 1 series. Yeah. There's I don't actually know the history that of all the little versions. But you know, Sunray 1, Sunray 2, Sunray 3. And they just work. We have cases where there's customers that are end of life. We no longer support some of the Sunray 1 devices. Yeah. And we're not like putting out firmware and fixes for those devices. And they're still sitting there working. And people, they don't use a lot of power. They don't break. You can upgrade your server infrastructure. You know, what you're losing out on over time is just that, there's better GPUs in here and you can do more graphics tricks and things. Yeah. But, I think that's the bottom line, and they're lean and they work.
Which is typical, like the graphics stuff too. Like, you can't watch YouTube videos high def full screen on a 1999 era laptop. So, of course, why would it work on your...
Right. Well, and you can't run Windows 8 on a 1999 laptop, and you could display Windows 8 on the Sunray 1.
Very true.
Right.
And this thing, so these are using the ALP protocol, right?
Correct.
So you fire this thing up, it's going to connect to Sunray server?
Yeah, there's a whole boot sequence that occurs with kind of discovery, and it depends on how you have the device configured. But in the normal auto discovery, it's going to do a broadcast and look. There's some DHCP hooks that we have. So if we get that information, then we know how to find the server. Optionally, a user could override in the firmware and say, I'm going to hard code you to go to server X. So there's a number of different ways. But basically, when you power it on, it's going to find its way to a Sunray server, which could be a standalone Sunray server, or it could be part of the whole VDI package for delivering desktops. But it's just Sunray server bundled with it.
And that Sunray server, so that's remoting the actual UI down to the Sunray, right? Because the Sunray, if I recall, like even the authentic, like everything comes from that Sunray server, right? The login screen, all that kind of stuff.
Correct. Right. So it could be an X window. If the Sunray server is running on Linux or Solaris, you could have it set up to just give what we call a regular session. So you just see a generic X login, however the server or GNOME is configured. Or in the case of VDI, we have something called kiosk, and we can paint a different screen and show whatever we want, like a desktop login or something like that. So that's where all the work is happening and brokering that data across.
And that you pick different desktops, right? Whatever. You can have a desktop chooser there if you want.
Right. So that gets into the internal workings of VDI. So, but yeah, multiple desktops and all of that stuff is how it's brokered out of VDI.
So you
for Sunray specifically, sorry, Brian, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go, Gib.
Well, okay. So tying it just a little bit back to the secure global desktop conversation, in that article I wrote about SGD, I likened it to the web version of Sunray's, because Sunray server is similar in that it can also take just about any application input and then send that on down to a Sunray terminal, right?
Right. Yeah, probably one of the coolest lesser known features is something we call kiosk session. And think of it as since the Sunray server runs on Solaris or Linux, so it's all X and Unix stuff. But imagine having a canvas that you could say, I want someone to have a desktop that consists of no window manager, a terminal window, and X clock or whatever. I mean, you can paint your canvas with whatever you want. And through that, you could also have what we call UTTSC sessions. So that's our little Windows connector. So you can draw other Windows elements and things and proxy them from other servers or services, but you just have an X canvas that you're painting. Most often you're not doing that, and you're just having a full login experience. I'm going to give you, here's your whole Windows desktop. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a blank canvas, really.
Go ahead, Gabe, sorry.
Oh, this is how we were able to see those demos where we're watching a DOS screen on a device. Or is that Oracle VDI that's doing that?
It was cool. We I think it was an Oracle VDI thing, because the demo was showing Windows 3.1 and DOS on Sunray.
Yeah, easy.
Cool, because you're remoting because Oracle VM, it's remoting at the sort of the hypervisor level. It's not like Citrix and Zen Desktop and Zen App and Vue have the agents inside the VM, so there's no like remote HGX agent for Windows 3.1. But here, it's the hypervisor is remote at that level. So
in that case, what you were kind of getting a demo of what we call the entire red stack, right? So I mean, Oracle has every single component needed to deliver VDI, and in the scenario that you're talking about, we're using VirtualBox as our hypervisor, and we have something called a VRDP channel. So all the graphics displays is going through VREP, so we have some cool hooks there. And at the end of the day, if you can virtualize it in VirtualBox, which is just darn near anything, I mean, you want to see BOS or whatever, you know, or Windows 3.1, you create a VM and boot it up, we can show that. So that was probably what was happening in that case, because if VirtualBox can run it, then the Sunray can show it.
Gotcha.
Basically.
So the Sunray server component, so that's what is creating the components that go on the canvas or painting to the Sunray clients, and that can be, as we said, X Windows stuff. It can be remote other, I guess, like Windows terminal server
right.
sessions,
correct.
VDI desktop sessions,
yes.
that it's brokering down. So all those connections are going through that Sunray server down to the individual Sunrays themselves.
Correct.
And then there's an iPad client too, and that's just sort of like a virtual, like a soft Sunray, right?
Right. So for the longest time, we had just the hardware devices, right? And if you go back to the Sun days, we had 50,000. I call them DTUs, desktop units. So we had 50,000 DTUs floating around, and that was how everybody got their desktop services.
Like in Sun internally.
In Sun globally, yeah. There was a global deployment of tens of thousands of these things, and it just worked. You get on a plane, you show up in Paris. Put your smart card in, bam, you got your session.
Wow.
And it's brilliant, you know, and then you go home and you're on VPN and you get your session again. So it's all the same and follow, you know, hot desks with you. But it fell short, and it was, you know, people wanted a soft client. And that was where iPad and Linux and Mac and Windows, we developed what we call OVDC, and you can run it on all those different platforms.
It's Oracle Virtual Desktop Client.
Correct.
OVDC.
Right. And so with that client, you have software access to all that VDI infrastructure. So sometimes you have a laptop and you don't need a DTU. You're not going to put it in your bag and carry it with you, but you just need soft client access. And so that was created to address that need, and it's been wildly popular. A lot of people use it, or a lot of people have a DTU in their office or at home, and then their other work location, they have a laptop, and so they just want to pop on, get what they need. And so that's where the soft client comes in.
And those soft clients, I mean, that – they're all connected to Sunray servers.
It's basically doing the same thing, right? So when you run the soft client, you know, you can either just put in an IP address or a host name, or there is an auto discover. It depends on how the Sunray services were deployed on that network and everything. So it depends on the config, but the same principles apply in the soft client that happen with the hard.
Can the soft client hook in? I guess it depends on platform. If it can hook into smart cards,
I think there's support or cases where we've got it working on Windows, but it's very specific because you need the smart card reader and you got to hook into the client.
And Windows has all the red drivers to the certificate to go through. And, there's no smart card reader on iPads, I guess.
So. Right. So yeah, that one's not everywhere like you'd want it to be. But a lot of people in the context of VDI are just using name sessions anyways, right? You just log in with your credentials. You got your username and your password, and people aren't always doing stuff with smart cards. So it's not too much of a hindrance.
And so this ALP protocol, this is the protocol that the Sunray uses to talk to the back-end Sunray server.
Right. And this is what we wanted to show more of in Geek Week. I remember that's actually why I know we're not going to be showing it here. But this one has the VPN stuff loaded. I remember we had that problem and I couldn't show you some of the cool stuff that was going on with ALP. So ALP is, you know, you have a data stream that's over UDP. And then you have, you know, obviously sensitive data, the keystrokes, things like that are going to be over a TCP channel. But the bulk of the data over UDP. Datagrams, you can lose a few, it's okay. And for drawing screens, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
And it survives a lot better in the high latency, low bandwidth scenarios. And so we have a lot of little things going on inside to detect what's my bandwidth, do I need to have compression on or off, and should I be doing something differently to give that optimal experience. So that's all that's what's going on there.
Is it the same as are the soft clients connecting via ALP also?
Yes.
And so so again, like from that standpoint, whether your endpoint is one of these soft clients or an actual Sunray device, I mean, you know, you don't really care.
It looks the same. I mean, if you're a Sunray administrator and you're looking at the admin console, on the web page, you basically just see different session identifiers, right? And there's kind of a little variation. The soft clients have a longer ID. The hard clients have a shorter ID. But you can just look and you can tell which ones are hard or soft. And you can query them and do things and look at the connection statistics and stuff like that.
And I guess when it gets into the resources you're publishing, that's where you can tie in like if two-factor is required or something. So if you're on a soft client and you can't hook in with a smart card, then you're not going to get access to maybe the same stuff if you're on an actual Sunray and can pop your smart card in there.
Yeah, if that's a requirement, right, you could have those restrictions in place, certainly.
On the back end then, do people typically – I guess if you're using your Sunray for that's probably where you're sitting down with a Sunray. That is your desktop. So I'm guessing you want to do everything. I mean, do people typically connect that into a Windows desktop, or do they just sort of aggregate the applications and let them sort of be aggregated together on the Sunray desktop itself?
Well, the most common deployment where things are heading is VDI, right? So most shops, most people for desktop productivity are running Windows. And so the requirement that would be given out is if I'm going to use this device, I need to get my Windows desktop on it. And so that's where VDI just comes in and all its different flavors of what everybody's trying to do. So, that's where Sunray kind of evolved and got bundled with. You can still buy it as a standalone product and just serve up X desktops and things like that. But that's not a huge market like it is the Windows desktop. So it's bundled with VDI. And then we're just virtualizing full desktops and giving people access to their entire desktop productivity environment and putting it in the data center.
And that's a product that's called Oracle VDI, right?
Correct.
And that, so it's got, you've got the option to buy Sunray hardware, you've got the Oracle Virtual Desktop soft client,
right?
The Sunray server, there's the Oracle VDI component that actually brokers the connections and all that sort of stuff, yeah?
Right. Yeah, so VDI is really comprised of three things. You have your management services, your VDI core, and how all that's managed, which would include the Sunray server component. You have a hypervisor, VRDP or with VirtualBox is the part of the Oracle solution, but we do support Hyper-V and also VMware. And then you have storage, and that's actually one of the big improvements that we've made since we last talked. Is the storage was a tight story, and we supported the Oracle's storage appliance, and that was it. And now we've opened the door to kind of what I would call generic storage. So we have a bunch of different storage options, because a lot of times you go into a shop and people have – they already have their big appliance. They don't want to go drop hundreds of thousands of dollars on some dedicated additional storage array. So we opened the door to support more devices. But with those three components, the core, the hypervisor, and storage, you got VDI.
And is the storage still hung up on ZFS?
No. So okay. If
I hung up is the wrong term, by the way, but because it hinged on ZFS before.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and we could spend a good chunk of time just talking about how the storage landscape's changed, but I think it's relevant. So the short answer there is no, we're not dependent on ZFS any longer.
Okay.
But when you say the storage was required Oracle storage before, so this is like where all the disk images were stored and everything?
Right. So the way the current release is 3.4.1, and as of 3.3.2, which is what we saw earlier this year when I came and worked with you guys, the only possible storage was network-attached storage. It was the Amber Road. There's all these names. It's Fishworks. It's Amber Road. It's Unified Storage. It's the Sun ZFS storage appliance. All of those things mean the same thing, which is
it's not complex at all.
But it was different names in different eras for the same darn thing. So I like to lump all those together so people know that's all just the Sun or the Oracle storage solution that came from Sun. So where were we?
So we're talking about how that was the Sun network storage,
right?
Or that was previously required for like disk images and all.
Right.
Like,
VMs had to run off that. We had to get iSCSI LUNs from that device, and we expected ZFS to be there, and all of our management stuff hooked in and talked to that, and did sparse clones and all that good stuff. Since then, we've opened the door to support generic iSCSI. So if any storage appliance can present an iSCSI LUN, then we can use it. And then we also now support local storage. And so there's a lot of interesting things going on in the market now with people kind of creating these little pods, or, you know, VDI in a box is one that's out there. And it just commodity hardware. How do you drive the price down? Storage is very expensive. It's hard to make it go fast. It requires, you know, expensive fast networking stuff. So a lot of people just want to demo something and say, I just want 50 desktops or 100 desktops. The hardware's fast enough today that you can put that on a single box. Give me local disk, make it fast. I don't care about HA. And so now we support those things as well. And that's been really well received.
I think it's smart because I feel like both of the products that we're talking about today are easy sells to Oracle shops. And I feel like that sort of makes it feel untouchable to people that aren't an Oracle shop, to smaller organizations or people that have just, you know, climbed on or married to somebody else. So anything that can make the whole suite more appealing to another group of people, I think, is better.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it opens the door with a simple, easy-to-deploy, single-box solution like that. That's really appealing to small and medium businesses, right? And that's not, you know, the space we've been playing with before.
Or big companies that aren't using Oracle.
Right.
I mean,
true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it opens the door.
Perish the thought.
We had talked about a year ago about the platform for the VMs for VDI, because Oracle has the whole Oracle VDI suite. I think your sort of go-to solution is VirtualBox, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my sort of gut reaction was like, VirtualBox, man, I don't know. And but I believe the comment back, I don't remember if it was from you or from, I mean, it was sort of like, hey, you know, these are they're just desktops. VirtualBox is written for desktops. I mean, like vSphere and Xen, however, that's all fine, but like VirtualBox is fine for desktops, especially when you're running it on, you know, like server class hardware. You can run VirtualBox on Windows. You can run it on any platform, and you know, that, in that sense, like for desktop admins, for them to run a Windows server with VirtualBox, that's a very simple thing for them to do.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I was waiting for the hypervisor holy war to start up again after I posted that Geek Week article about Oracle, was because there's so many people that are so vocal. If you mention Hyper-V and they start going to town on it and, you know, talking about why Vue is better. If you mentioned Xen or that kind of a thing, I expected the same thing out of VirtualBox, although I don't recall actually getting too much contention on that. So maybe the industry has VirtualBox as a little more highly regarded than we thought.
Yeah, there's been a lot of innovations that continue to come, you know, through that platform, and you know, the only juice that you need to make all that go is the guest editions that you throw in the VM. So it's a Type 2 hypervisor, but it's geared towards a desktop, right? It's geared towards multi-monitor graphics support, you know, USB and all the different flavors and things that you want to do on a desktop, right?
And I guess since it's all yours, it's all Oracle stuff, it can be fine-tuned to do exactly what you want. You're not
Precisely.
Trying to shoehorn some other features in.
Right. That's the idea.
It's on a faster release cycle, I think, than these other ones too, right? Maybe because it's not like the core kernel of the OS, so you don't have this like year between updates.
Right. They're coming out all the time. And so when we're packaging together and planning for, you know, 3.next or whatever that release is, we kind of start to, you know, make a trajectory where we line up and we're like, okay, we're so many weeks out. Let's get the, you know, what VBox release are we going to put in there? Or if it's tied to a feature that we're waiting for, you know, and we kind of merge it in. So, but the releases from VBox come out much more quickly.
You know, as you're talking, it makes me think, so the industry is sort of auditioning potential players for the number three spots in desktop virtualization now that Dell has essentially indicated that, you know, once that Quest deal closes, we're not sure what happens to Quest desktop virtualization. You know, there's certainly, they've got components and they'll continue to do the client stuff with Wise and throw some software there, but it doesn't look good for, because I don't think Dell wants to compete against, you know, Citrix and VMware.
Their partners,
yeah,
specifically,
yeah. But you know, especially with the Oracle VDI stuff, I mean, you know, there's the hypervisor. You can run it on the hypervisors. It can be that thing. You've got clients for all the platforms. It hooks into two-factor authentication. It can broker the different applications. I mean, it's got all the parts that need to be there.
Yeah, we've been out there. We've been doing it. It's been around. It's vetted, and it's in use, and we're making improvements all the time. So it's a competitive product in the market space. None of the, you know, top players have the perfect suite that does everything just right. So, you know, I think when we put our marketing hats on and just create awareness, you know, once people start using it, just like you said with the hard clients, like people that once they learn Sunray and understand and kind of gets demystified, it's a great thing. It just works. And so, you know, I think our biggest hurdle is probably just getting that message out there and showing people how easy it is to really use.
Do you have to use Sunray?
Pardon me?
So do you have to use Sunray? Say you're using Oracle VDI only for Windows desktops, can I use regular Microsoft RDP? Can it broker that? Can I use other thin clients or just RDP, remote desktop connection on Windows computers to connect
as
well?
Yeah, I mean, you could put the VDI infrastructure in your data center, and you don't have to use vRDP. There is an option in there. You can use Microsoft remote desktop, so you could have a pool of Windows VMs waiting for RDP to come up. There's an RDP broker in there. And then our management suite will redirect. So we were talking about where the sessions go. When you are using MS RDP, the connections from the client, like an RDP client, actually get brokered and handed off directly to the hypervisor. So they kind of get routed a little bit differently. But it's just in the trenches. But the short answer is, yeah, we can do RDP clients. And then you're choosing a different feature set, right? So once you step out of vRDP and some of the enhancements and things that we have going on there, then you're just dealing with the RDP framework and what's possible or not possible there.
And that's but at that point, then you could use remote effects or features like that then as well.
I believe so. I haven't spent as much time messing around with the Microsoft side of
that. Although I guess that's probably if you have Hyper-V on the back end too. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're also going to probably lose out on a lot of like the single sign-on and that kind of stuff that I'm sure
right.
is more tied to using the Oracle stack.
Yeah, so single sign-on does work in conjunction with VirtualBox. So if you install the guest editions with the right switch, then when you log in to VDI and provide your credentials, that's your authentication and then your authorization. You get passed through, and as long as the Windows credentials scheme, whether it's local or using Active Directory, as long as that matches the credentials that you have, then you get single sign-on. So
what are we looking at? You know, we've got sort of a few minutes left. What are we looking at sort of like what's next for you guys? You guys are probably not allowed to talk about anything, but I'm going to ask anyway. I mean, you know,
we can both look at Chris now,
yeah.
and see what he has to say.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the focus since we've been at Oracle has been around trying to provide a full stack solution, because I think we're uniquely positioned to be able to do that across server storage, client devices, middleware, and applications even, right? So, you know, for shops that that want to have a single vendor to deal with from a support perspective, you know, I think we offer the most pieces out of anybody in terms of a real world deployment. And so tighter integration with those things, trying to make sure that Oracle apps, again, work, you know, as good as possible through our platform. Still trying to be as open as we can be too, of course. You know, we support Hyper-V and vSphere on the back end, and actually Vue too with the Sunray clients directly if you want to do that. So, you know, trying to maintain integration and improve integration across the Oracle stack while still being open so that we can be applicable in more environments than not.
I have to share a story for the single shop message that we have, you know, single vendor. In a previous job, I actually worked in cloud infrastructure managed services, and I was the IT guy in the data center dealing with the multiple vendors. We had Mellanox. We had Supermicro. We had a Sun Storage appliance. We had VMware. We had the Oracle Rack. We had all these different pieces, and we had our little problems with it. And it was the biggest pain to, you know, I was the only IT guy, so I had to go figure out, like, why isn't something working? And you go say it's a Mellanox problem. They point you to VMware, and then you wound up getting the finger-pointing game, and it was really frustrating. So that single vendor story is actually really compelling, I think, just to say, I don't know. It's not working, and it's all yours, so go figure it out.
And even if that vendor has to pull in 15 different teams internally,
yeah,
you know,
hands are clean.
Whatever the heck
that's
you got to do
yeah.
back
right.
there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, so Dell kind of walking away from Quest Virtual Desktop like that, because they could have done the same thing, but if they don't want to, you know, if they're bigger to Citrix and VMware, then off they go. So, when you say, like, this single vendor, literally, it's the application level. Like, that's not... Yeah. There's not too many. Well, not too many of those, I guess, and fewer every year.
Yep.
So, Chris Kowalik, John Renko, final thoughts on Oracle VDI, Sunray's, you know, everything we talked about in the last minute or two, anything that that you wanted to share that we didn't touch on?
I think we hit everything. I'm really excited that, you know, I feel like we have an opportunity here to help customers deploy these applications, and that single point of accountability that you're talking about is really actually going to literally help people, as opposed to just creating another product in the marketplace that just adds more complexity. It's like we actually have an opportunity, I think, to reduce it for people, which I think is a really good thing.
Yeah, and the only thing I can say is just being knee-deep in what's going on in VDI. The space is still evolving. It's still new, and the concepts are changing, and as hardware gets faster and more dense, the concepts and what's possible keep changing, and we're on it, and we're engaged, and we're staying close to what's happening. So I think there's going to be a lot of exciting things that are going to unfold.
Well, and we've seen a lot. I mean, your presence in our space kind of ramped up, like not just this show, but like the Geek Week thing. You know, you guys were Briveform. There was a big booth at VMworld last week talking. You know, there's Sunrays in the booth and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So
Oracle's done a lot for that. Yeah. The Sun was never all about the exposure. So, and I think things like this and that kind of presence is good for kind of demystifying what Oracle VDI is, because that's part of, I mean, you can see in the chat room here, there's a lot of people talking about how big of a product it is, right? And I went up to Chris at VMworld and said, why is this stuff so complex? And so after having a few more conversations, much like what we just had today, the complexity, this aura of complexity starts to diminish a little bit. And while it's still complex, but only, and I realize that's kind of a four-letter word, but it's almost necessarily complex because all of the pieces are right there. And there's so many of them.
Like you take your enterprise app vendor and your thin client vendor and your storage vendor and all that and put that all into one bucket. That's
right.
Complex too. That's why we wrote a book about it.
and I think what's critical now, as far as, like you said, the open auditions for the third spot, I feel like it's making this more appealing to the shops that would otherwise just be considering VDI, right? If it has nothing else to do with the other behind the scenes applications and whatever the big iron stuff is in the data center, if it's just VDI, the conversation has to, I think, start to shift towards comparing with Zen Desktop, comparing with VMware View, and seeing how those things go up toe to toe now. Because this total, you know, one throat to choke kind of thing is great, but I think it's still, there's still the biggest hill yet to climb is getting in the same conversation as Zen Desktop and Vue. So good luck for that. This is a great first step for that, though, is to get the name out there and get the complexity kind of resolved and boiled down a little bit.
I like to Dan's point on the thing. He's like, yeah, but people, when they hear Solaris Linux, you know, like, you lose a lot of people. But I said that too. I'm afraid of, you know, hypervisor, like Solaris hypervisor or whatever. And they're like, so what do you like, vSphere? Yeah, how do you change an IP address on a vSphere server? you're in a terminal window issuing Linux commands. I mean,
yeah.
So it's like, you know, all that can be hidden also from the users. So,
but I'm the same way. And if we're that way, and we've been doing this for 15 years, I can't imagine what somebody just going into a project is thinking. So, you know, I can see both sides for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we are a little bit over time, which we can do on this internet thing. But to all you who are chatting, you know, we'll leave the window open for a little bit. You can all continue banging away in there. But we'll get the show posted, and once that's done, then the conversation we can continue in the comments of the article. To you, Chris Kowalik, John Renko, thank you so much for coming into the studio. Chris, thank you for staying in town over the weekend from VMworld and being live here. Gabe, as always, thank you so much for dialing in and driving this conversation. Thanks to Oracle for being here today. So from San Francisco, this is Brian Madden. Thank you all for listening.